Hey, welcome back to Beyond the Box Score. Today is a good day because we are talking about Harold Fannin Jr. today. And I found my favorite Harold Fannin Jr. stat just last night. Still finding Harold Fannin Jr. stats this deep into the offseason. Absolutely love that. So Harold Fannin Jr., this is a stat. He tied rookie season Christian McCaffrey for the most receptions where more than 5 yards were gained after contact for any player under the age of 22 years old. It's a very specific stat, but there are some really, really good players that qualified. You know, your rookie season, Jamar Chase's, Bijan Robinson, Justin Jefferson, some really, really got me, Saquon Barkley, some really good players with the ball in their hands that were qualified, that were 21 years old, that did not match this 15 receptions that gained more than 5 yards after initial contact with a defender. Harold Fannin Jr., Christian McCaffrey at the top, which really does stand out to me. And how I found this random stat is I was trying to find a way to contextualize just what a dog Harold Fannin Jr. is. If you watch the film, which I went back and rewatched every reception from his rookie season, and it's just so insanely impressive to me how often Harold Fannin Jr. is creating additional yards, especially in an offense that wasn't all that cohesive or functional last year. The quarterback play wasn't often leading to natural ways to create yards after the catch in terms of throwing in rhythm with good timing and accuracy, and doing the things that helps, you know, accentuate a player who creates after the catch by setting them up to do so. Still, Fannin Jr. was just constantly churning out yards after the catch. So I gave you my favorite Harold Fannin Jr. stat. My favorite Harold Fannin Jr. play is another one that I dug up last night, just reminiscing on his rookie season. Came against the Pittsburgh Steelers. He breaks back to the ball, falls upon making the catch into like a backwards barrel roll, and uses that momentum to swing his trail foot around to plant and then immediately cut as he pushes up from the ground and proceeds to then stiff arm the next defender and gain 18 yards after the catch. I mean, there's four defenders on the play. The initial defender gets dusted by the barrel roll. He's not ready for that. And then it then requires three other players to corral Harold Fannin Jr. Like, I just do not think people realize how good this player is. And so it's backed up by all the data. It's clearly showing up on film. And it also is in his collegiate profile. So he was a player who many were very excited about coming into the league, but then there were many doubters as well, because he didn't run a fast 40. He ran a 4.71, which isn't disqualifyingly slow by any means, but he's a tight end, and we're a bit obsessed with athleticism at tight end, especially speed, that has proven at times to correlate to NFL success at the position. And so I think people overthought this one a little bit because we're talking about the most productive tight end in college football history. He led the nation in receiving, not just tight ends. He had 1,555 receiving yards in his third season at Bowling Green. He had an early breakout. It's so clear when you really go back and look at what this player has done that he's just a really freaking good football player. And you felt it this year in fantasy. He got on the field right away. He had 9 targets in week 1, more than David Njoku, but was in a part-time role as things progressed early in his rookie season. He needed to prove a lot as a blocker, and they tested him out that way a lot. I think there's still a long ways to go. He's young. He's new to playing the tight end position, transferred over from defense just, I think, 5 years ago. So he's got some room to fill out in his body and in his skill set as a blocker, but they did test him out that way a lot, and it definitely did not keep him off of the field. Once David Njoku went down, Fannin became a full-time player, and you felt the breakout in fantasy at the end of the year. 5 straight games with double-digit fantasy points when you needed Fannin most for the fantasy football playoffs, he showed up. So yeah, he's somebody who I think we still, though, because of the Browns of it all here, like, I think we still don't understand how good he is and how good he can be. So that's what we're going to do today. I'm going to throw a bunch of stats at you to hopefully get us thinking about Fannin in a different way. Because I think a sentiment that I hear a lot is he got all these targets, right? He got all these targets as a rookie. You can see his target totals on the screen here. He had, 11 and 14 targets in back-to-back games in week 14 and 15, finished with over 100 targets as a rookie, but he only had 731 receiving yards. So are we dealing with a player who has a limited ceiling? Is the athleticism something that's going to cap the ultimate ceiling for what this player can do? I think that has the final stats in terms of yards per target and total yardage created has so much more to do with the Browns than with Fannin and what Fannin could be. He led the team in receiving as a rookie tight end. That's so impressive. The number of tight ends who have done that as rookies is very, very small. It's fewer than 10 rookie tight ends have ever done it. During the modern era, it's basically just him and Colson Loveland and Kyle Pitts. It's very, very rare. So I'm going to do my best to quantify how bad this Browns offense was and how limiting it was. But I think you have to keep that in mind when you're looking at Fannin's stats, is that it could have been so much better, I think, in a better offense. So I'm going to compare him to a bunch of players. And this will probably feel irresponsible because some of these players have become, some of the best at their positions. The first one I'm going to start with is Amon-Ra St. Brown, who was also a later pick. Did not have nearly the collegiate production as Fannin, but I don't think he was I think he was a bit miscast with the way that he was used at USC. And I think he fell a little bit in the draft because of athleticism concerns, not a top line speed guy. I want to compare the two because their average depths of target were actually very similar. 7 yards down the field was the average depth of target for St. Brown compared to 6 for Fannin. And Fannin actually averaged more yards after the catch than St. Brown. They both got a lot of yards after contact. They both win in finesse ways in terms of the way that they're able to set up and manipulate defenders before even needing to use their athleticism. And then they win with power at the point of separating, at the point of winning with the athleticism. It's not, they both have good bursts. They're powerful players in general in terms of explosiveness, but particularly with power and strength in their body is how they often create the actual separation, in addition to just getting defenders off guard, off balance, with the way that they manipulate them. It's all of the little details, and it shows up when you watch Fannin run his routes, and obviously St. Brown has made a living doing this. The actual production, it's really pretty shocking to me that in terms of fantasy points per route run during St. Brown's rookie season, it's nearly identical. 0.42 fantasy points per route run for Harold Fannin, 0.4 for St. Brown. So Fannin actually averaged slightly more fantasy points per route run as a member of the Cleveland Browns. 0.44 fantasy points per route run was the rate for Brock Bowers during his historical rookie season. So I'm going to jump to that comparison. It's a dangerous one to make. Brock Bowers was the best rookie tight end that we've ever seen. And still, I'm going to talk about it. When you compare the two, it's very similar in a lot of ways, in a lot of per opportunity ways. Bowers was at 5.3 yards after the catch per reception compared to 4.9 for Fannin, and they had an identical average depth of target. So Bowers was slightly better creating after the catch. I think he's similar to Fannin in his ability to break tackles. They don't do it in the same way necessarily, but effectively they're similar. But Bowers can create longer plays because he's just faster. He's insane. But if you look at the per route production, it was very similar. And then the ways that they were getting their production was pretty similar as well. The offense was just more focused on Bowers because, he comes in with a draft pedigree and right away you know that you're building this offense around him. And so the stat that I've got that really blows my mind when you're comparing these two. And I do think it's a relevant comparison because, like, neither offense was functional. The 2024 Raiders offense was slightly more functional than the 2025 Browns offense, but both offenses were seeing more targets go to the tight end position than we typically see. It's really, really rare to see offenses center their target distribution around a tight end, even one as good as Bowers. And yet that's what we saw with these two players because there wasn't really any other option. And so what do you do with that? Like that affects things in a number of ways. The target numbers get a little bit inflated. If you're, you know, thinking about how this could play out long-term, is it likely that Bowers will continue to have like 30% of the targets? Probably not. There's not very many tight ends who do that. But at the same time, the efficiency can get brought down because defenses are so hyper fixated on this one player. They know where the ball is going. And so could Brock Bowers be much, much more efficient on a per target basis later into his career as he gets better, as he gets better teammates, as he gets better quarterback play, as the plan gets better? You know, like there's so many ways where it could get better. So I think in general, getting this type of volume at all is really noteworthy. And that's basically where I'm at with Fannin, is I don't think he's as good as Bowers. I truly think Bowers is one of the best talents that we've ever seen. And still, I'm going to put Fannin in the conversation because statistically, it's very similar in a lot of ways, the rookie season. And so here's the stat I've got. This is the percentage dating back to 2000, tight ends under the age of 22. It's percentage of receiving stats accounted for while on the field, 34% receiving market share for Bowers while on the field as a rookie. So that shatters everything else that we've got here. If you're watching on YouTube, you see that. For audio listeners, Kyle Pitts, during his crazy rookie season on an offense that really had no receivers, had 31% of the team's receiving. Some other interesting names here are like Rob Gronkowski, Aaron Hernandez, 20%, 26%. Colson Loveland last year, while on the field, 28% of the team's receiving yards. That's really, really high. 31% for Fannin, 30% of the receptions compared to 31% for Bowers. So Bowers slightly edges him out in yardage and reception share while on the field. And Fannin had 40% of the receiving touchdowns while on the field compared to 28% for Bowers. So comparable numbers for the two. If looking at what they produced relative to their offense while on the field, which I do think is relevant because, I mean, you can only function within the offense that you're in. And so again, to that sentiment that I hear about him not being an efficient yardage producer, I want to now just compare him to Bowers and McBride last year. Last year, Fannin as a rookie, as a 21-year-old rookie, youngest tight end in the NFL, averaged 1.68 yards per route run. Bowers was at 1.71. McBride was at 1.79. It might not register that McBride would be in the same range as those two because he had so many yards last year. But that's really due to the fact that he ran a completely abnormal amount of routes last year in this Cardinals offense that was just functional enough to keep getting first downs while playing from way behind and produce tons of offensive volume, even if it wasn't very real, even if it was a lot of garbage time stuff. And so the stat that I've got on that, this is mind-blowing because I remember the Cardinals season being this way, but not to this extent. The only offenses that averaged more receiving yards per game than the Arizona Cardinals last year were the Cowboys, Rams, Lions, and Patriots. That's the end of the list. The Cardinals produced the 12th most fantasy points last year on offense. The Browns produced the fewest fantasy points per game since the 2018 Arizona Cardinals. So that's almost 10 years of teams, and this was the worst one in terms of total offensive fantasy point production, was last year's Browns team. They produced 185 receiving yards and 0.94 receiving touchdowns per game. Arizona almost produced twice as many receiving touchdowns. And again, they were fifth in receiving yards per game. So it is noteworthy to me that within those two structures, Fannin was averaging nearly as many yards per route run as McBride. If you look at like the overall team production in terms of yards per route run, the Cardinals averaged 1.25. That was 25th. The Raiders averaged 1.22. That was 27th. The Browns are at 1.07. Only the Jets were worse. And still, Fannin had a very, very similar rate in terms of yards per run to both McBride and Bowers. So I don't think it is relevant to point to his rookie season inefficiency in terms of yards per targets and stuff like that, for that reason. And for the reason that we have a very clear path to him being a productive player. If you simply look at the skill set, he's very, very good. We've already seen him produce yardage at a crazy efficient clip as a college player. And that's through route winning, being able to win down the field, and being able to produce all the extra yards after the catch. So some stats I've got on that is on throws of 10 or more air yards that were deemed catchable, he actually had almost as many yards per target as Brock Bowers last year, and he had more yards per target than Trey McBride. 15.4 for Fannin, 15.8 for Bowers, 14.4 for McBride. So these are throws that are coming down the field. 10 or more yards past the line of scrimmage in the air that were deemed catchable by the Fantasy Points data suite, which they chart every single play. So if it was a catchable target and it came down the field, how did he do? 15.4 yards per compared to 14.4 for McBride. He also averaged 2.31 yards after contact per reception compared to 1.75 for Bowers and 1.72 for McBride. So significantly more yards after contact on average per reception. And this is to my point, that was the initial reason I found this, you know, new favorite Harold Fannin Jr. stat, is because I was curious how many of these receptions there were where he got multiple yards after contact. And there were a lot, a historical amount, in fact. So let me show you here. Like Brock Bowers as a rookie, this is where I started, was like the number of receptions that simply gained any yards after contact. And there were 50 of them for Fannin, which is a lot. If you look at historical rookies under the age of 22, that's more than Amon-Ra St. Brown had as a rookie. That's where I started digging into those two as a comparison. It's just behind rookie season Ja'Marr Chase, Malik Nabers, and Saquon Barkley. And then here's Bowers at the tippy top with 75 of these. But if you look at gains of more than 5 yards, that's where you find Fannin tied with McCaffrey. And so I think that's relevant because he just didn't get the same number of targets and receptions as Bowers overall. So he didn't quite get up to that, you know, total accumulation of just like another one, because his offense just couldn't sustain drives, couldn't create first downs in many plays. But yeah, here's that list in terms of actual plays that gained more than 5 yards after the catch or after contact. He's tied with McCaffrey. He's headed this electric Juju Smith-Schuster rookie season, Ja'Marr Chase, Saquon Barkley. It was really, really cool watching Fannin just do this consistently. Okay, I want to contextualize how impressive it is to do this at this age, because like I said, he was the youngest tight end in the NFL last year. He's new to playing the position. So what were some other tight ends doing when they were 21 years old? Travis Kelce, 150 yards and 2 touchdowns at Cincinnati when he was 21 years old. He didn't break out until 22, his third season in college, and he didn't have his NFL breakout until age 25. Harold Fannin's already had his NFL breakout as a 21-year-old rookie. What was Trey McBride doing at 21? 330 yards at Colorado State. To be fair, that came in 4 games. He averaged 2.8 yards per run at the age of 21, which is good. But his like true breakout came the next year at age 22. his NFL breakout didn't come until year two at age 24. So like, who has broken out as early as Fannin? It's just Brock Bowers. I've got some college data for you here on the screen. It's sort of by age, looking at some of the youngest breakouts. So you got Kyle Pitts, Loveland, Bowers, McBride, and Fannin. It's truly just Bowers and Fannin. If you're looking at age 19 breakouts, the age 20 breakouts were Kyle Pitts and Loveland. And then McBride broke out shortly after that. This Fannin, the Fannin stuff is crazy. Like, if you just look at, I mean, to me, it's so clearly just Fannin and Bowers that pop in this early collegiate career data in so many ways, like the high avoided tackle rates, 27% for Fannin, 32% for Bowers. Those two are way, way, way above all the other players. So look at the crazy yard per out run production, 2.8 yards per out run for Fannin as a freaking 19-year-old, which is just behind that insane 3.1 yard per out run rate for Brock Bowers when he was 19 years old. And then Fannin goes on to average 4 yards per route run the next year as a 20-year-old. 1,555 yards, 10 touchdowns, no drop-off against higher levels of competition. 11 catches for 137 yards and a touchdown against Penn State. 8 catches for 145 yards and a touchdown against Texas A&M. So like, can this guy produce efficient yardage? Hell yeah. We've seen him do just that. And the recipe is pretty clear. Like, he can win down the field. He can win with the ball in his hands. You can design stuff to him. He's really, really good. Laporta, I hear sometimes people bring up Sam Laporta as like, we saw him kind of fall off after his big rookie season. The rookie season kind of caught teams off guard. Could we see something like that with Fannin? Like, I think if you just compare the two, it's pretty, like, all the metrics are going to say that Fannin is better. If you look at first retarget rate, Fannin had a higher rate than Laporta, 22%. So like, I just did an episode with Ryan Heath, who's been helping us out here on Beyond the Box Score. Ryan Heath works for Fantasy Points Data. And looking at their data that they have, Ryan has found correlations to next year's fantasy scoring in terms of what's predictive at every single position. And at tight end, two stats that really stood out were yardage market share, the percentage of the team's total receiving yards that a player accounted for at tight end, and then first read target rate. Fannin looks great in both of those. He beats Sam Laporta's rookie season in both of those. 24% yardage market share for Fannin compared to 19% for Laporta. He created more yards after contact on average, for sure. He checks all the boxes statistically. And I think it's just really important to understand that he's that guy. He's that good. Because there's a lot of trepidation right now when thinking about what to do with Fannin for fantasy purposes, because the Browns drafted two receivers early. And so people are worrying that maybe the targets will fall off. And I don't think that makes sense. I think that when we're dealing with a player of this caliber, things orient around them. Not so much that he's going to have the 30% target share that Trey McBride had last year or whatever. I don't know if it's going to get that out of control. I think that was a set of special circumstances, but like, I don't think you take a player like this off of the field. I think he's the best playmaker they have, pretty clearly. So let me just take you through the talent case for Fannin. In addition to like all the stats that I just laid out, I want to point out that he's also way more athletic than people realize, and bigger than people realize. Like, he has a longer wingspan than Tyler Warren, Trey McBride, Mason Taylor, Sam Laporta, Brock Bowers, Jake Ferguson. His athletic testing was better than McBride in terms of what they actually did. So the only combine tests that McBride did was vertical, broad jump, and bench press. And Fannin topped him in all of those. McBride is 1 inch taller, 5 pounds heavier. But again, Fannin has the longer wingspan. Fannin was one of the few tight ends who actually did the three cone drill, and he crushed it. Like, he's a really, really surprisingly good athlete. And again, it's functional athleticism that shows up on the field and works. And then, yeah, of course, the last thing is just that he produced better in college, earlier in college, and he's already producing similarly in the NFL on a per opportunity basis and in a worse offense at the age of 21. I just don't think that this is something that gets put back in the bottle. And the last set I've got on production that blew my mind when digging into the fan and stuff, he had a 20% target share in 10 straight games to close out the rookie season. So that doesn't include the week 17 game that he only played about a fourth of the snaps because he got hurt. Here are the other best players in the league in terms of the number of consecutive games that they hit that 20% rate. Jaxon Smith-Njigba did it 11 straight times. Amon-Ra St. Brown did it 10 straight times. Puka Nacua did it 8 straight times. So did Ja'Marr Chase. So did Chris Olave. Olave hit it every single game except for one. Trey McBride hit it 17 straight times because he's freaking insane. He did it every game last year. And then the other one that really surprised me was Zay Flowers. Zay Flowers did it 14 straight games, hit at least a 20% target share. Harold Fan did it 10 straight games, which, yeah, that's only JSN and Zay Flowers and McBride who hit it more. That's a random poll, you know, 20% isn't necessarily meaningful in any way. But just to consistently be able to show up and be the target hog on a team where like defenses pretty much know that that's where it's going, and be able to produce consistently, even in this bad offense, really says a lot to me. And so, do I know what the role is going to be? Do I know what his route rate is going to be? Do I know what the personnel packages are going to be this year? No, I don't. But I really am not overthinking it. You know, I'm not too worried about it. Like, and I think that we love KCC here. Like, we love Casey Concepcion here on Beyond the Box Score for sure. Let me just point you to these rookie profiles here to close things out. I think that he could be in time the best receiver from this class. He's so good. Denzel Boston is a legitimate, like, good player, good real life out wide receiver that could get out there and play that X role for them. I get why things could look different this year for Fannin with a different coach. But I just think he's so good that at the tight end position where there's a lot of uncertainty with these players outside of the top couple, I think he's fine where he goes in drafts. I'm strategically, the way that I've been approaching drafts, not spending that middle round pick on the position very often. I want to go early or late, basically. I want to get Colson Levin. Like, if I'm going to pay up, I'm just paying up for him instead. But I get it with Fannin. I think it's totally realistic that the Browns could be in a very similar situation to last year where they're just playing from behind all of the time and they're throwing all of the time. And maybe the run game will be better. So I just did a Quinshon Judkins profile. You might find that interesting if you're thinking about the Browns here, because there's a lot of reasons why you could tell yourself that it's going to be better based off of the head coaching hire and they've changed their offensive line. But I just don't know. Like, the defense could be worse, and they could find themselves playing in more negative game scripts. And I really don't feel that much confidence that the run game is going to be significantly better. So I think that they might have to drop back a lot. And no David Njoku now. So if Harold Fannin is just the primary tight end, and we see instead of, you know, 400 routes that he ran last year, we see 500 or 600 routes, I think that his per route data could extrapolate and he could become really, really productive over the course of the full season, even if the quarterback plays terrible, because I think he's one of the few players in the NFL, and this is borne out in the yards after contact creation, I think he's one of the few players in the NFL who could exist in a situation like this and still put up production. We saw it as a freaking rookie. And again, he's new to the position. He's, I think, only going to keep getting better. And so, to me, in Dynasty, you got Harold Fannin Jr., you just say thank you and you hold on to him, because I think it's going to be a fun ride. In redraft, I don't think I'm going to go out of my way to be targeting Fannin much, just because of the way that I'm building out teams. But I wouldn't blame you. If you're playing in full PPR and he falls, if the people in your draft are afraid to take him, he might be a unique scorer. He might be somebody who gives you a floor every week of 8 to 10 points just because of the raw number of receptions that he gets. And then on the weeks where he creates on his own, you're getting more. You're getting into that 15 to 20 5-point range because he can create touchdowns, he can create long plays, he can create broken plays all on his own because sometimes it takes three or four defenders to bring this guy down. So that's where I'm at with Fannin. I would love to tell you that I have a crystal ball and I know how this is going to play out with this Cleveland offense, but I don't. But I can tell you very confidently that this is a transcendent type of talent. It was just clear last year. If you watch the film, which I don't blame you if you weren't watching Cleveland Browns film. But so I just did this Judkins profile and I was like, he's so, so, so good. But I don't know if I'll be drafting him for fantasy just because I think that he's not maybe quite good enough to transcend the Browns of it all. That's not how I feel about Fannin. I think Fannin is a fine pick. I think he's legitimately that good. I mean, I freaking compared him to Brock Bowers and Amon-Ra St. Brown today. So do with that what you will. You can call me crazy in the comments if you want, but I really do think Fannin is that guy. And I hope that you have come to gain a deeper appreciation for him here. And if not, then check out my freaking Twitter account because you will find all sorts of Harold Fannin Jr. cut-ups, and they are a lot of fun. So if you want to spend your time that way, go search Harold Fannin Jr.'s name from my Twitter profile and go watch some Harold Fannin Jr. film because I think that will be a good use of your time. All right. Thank you all for being here. I will see you at the next Beyond the Box Score episode.
Criminal Minds Evolution is back on Paramount Plus.
We are going to go where the evidence takes us.
This season, evil is contagious.
Once it starts, it can't be stopped.
Criminal Minds Evolution. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus.